Now this one dedicated to the girl them with the angel face and the devil heart. You know, Sir Ragamuffin, check out the most new pop players come feel the case. Step up my youth, hear this.
I know this little girl, her name is Maxine. Her beauty's like a bunch of roses. If I ever tell you about Maxine, you only say I don't know what I know. But murder she wrote.
Real, real.
Murder she wrote. Murder she wrote. Murder she wrote.
I channel with him, a pretty face and bad character. Then they kind of live in town. Old chapter, follow me. A pretty face and bad character.
Yes.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. What is your favorite song from, like, your favorite island song growing up from the Caribbean?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Okay, let's break
that's
it down.
That's a good question.
Soca, reggae, what else is there?
Dancehall.
Dancehall.
I would say, okay, the song that I remember most growing up is actually Murder, She Wrote.
Mm-hmm.
In action. I was way too young.
Me too. Oh, God. Yes.
Step up.
She want a lover.
Action.
That's a bag of mood.
Sweet.
Don't be lady girl, then broke out.
Action.
That's a bag of mood.
Sweet.
We didn't know what we were singing.
You need some action. That's what we were saying. Satisfaction.
That can happen in my homework.
Right.
That can happen in
my chemistry is falling. Like chemistry.
My basketball
homework.
Game. Like what?
Right. When Mama was cooking dinner.
Right.
Just, there you go.
So she was like tenderize that meat. You had to.
Tenderize. That's a good one. I remember growing up. I was such a square. And my aunt used to make fun of me for it. And so when I was a kid, like, she would put on all of these songs and she would have them in the headphones, like the CD player or the Walkman. And she would put them on and she would teach me, like, how to dance, like, how to whine and, like, all of this stuff.
Oh, snap.
And she would, like, be
Did you find the
it.
Boom boom?
But the thing is, I was just like, no, I don't want to do it. No,
you're too shy.
Mm-hmm. And she would just call me loser and all types of
stuff.
Oh,
no.
I was just not with it. But I think when I got older, I started to appreciate the music a lot more.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I was like, I don't know what this is. Give me my Barney.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't want this.
It's like, I feel like it is why, like, I listen to a lot of that stuff right now. Right?
Yeah.
Like, so I remember, you know, those songs, like, Mercurial Action, like, even, like, Beanie Man, like, all these things.
Yeah.
Like, on Saturdays, like, during cleaning time.
Oh, my, I was going to say that. That's what my brother used to. I have a distinct memory of when I used to live in Brownsville, being small, and my brother cleaning and blasting Buju Banta.
Yes.
Oh, sweeping to the beach.
Yes. Vacuuming, like.
Yes.
I definitely can relate to, like, the Saturday morning cleanup.
Yes.
And I remember, like, when I would stay over at my grandmother's house and waking up to, like, 8 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, going to the kitchen. She got the ironing board out.
Mm-hmm.
And she got the radio on, what was it? What's the radio station that played, like, all of this, like, Caribbean gospel? They kind of all sound the same. Why you made that face? And she in the kitchen and the body is moving.
Did the ironing board have legs?
Yes.
So let me tell you.
Yes, it did.
Mine had legs too, but, like, our kitchen is narrow, so there's, like, countertops on both sides. So we would put the ironing board on the countertop and iron in the kitchen. And, like, imagine my grandmother, like, shaking her ass to action in the kitchen. And I'm, like, young, and I'm, like, trying to get through it. I'm like, Grandma.
Just let me move.
But it's so much ass.
She want to whine on you. I'm like, no. Stop. I don't want it.
No, Grandma, no.
I'm too young.
Mush on
your brain. Mush
on your brain.
I don't know. When I think about all of those, like, what we just mentioned, like, the music and being with your family and just remembering, like, those more simpler times.
Yeah.
I think it makes you appreciate the culture a little it bit does. More. You're mm-hmm. like, I have something extra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes you feel special.
Yep.
In yes. that way.
So yep. I think that's really important. So, you know what we're here to talk about? We're going to get into some feelings today.
All up and looking at it.
So, Deshaun.
Raquel.
Hey.
What's up, girl?
You want to tell the people who you are, where you from, what you do?
Tell the people then.
I hate this question. It's always so much pressure. I am second gen Jamaican. My grandparents were born in Jamaica, came over here when they were young. My mom was born here, and my dad. I consider myself second generation reborn. And I say that because like my grandparents when I got over here were like really big on assimilation, so like lose your accent, lose the culture, like be American, fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother more so than my dad. Like my dad, he's just sort of like a hood dude from Brooklyn. Like he doesn't even feel Caribbean, whatever that means. But like he pretty much like identifies as Black, and you know that culture. He doesn't talk about the Caribbean like that.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother, on the other hand, like she actively, because of my grandfather mostly, but actively like rebuffed Caribbean culture, like Caribbean music. She is very religious, so like took on like very white Christian values and like
mm-hmm.
music with curses or like dirty language she like didn't want to listen to. And I was like all of dance hall. And she like even now, right, like when I put on, you know, soca or I put on reggae or I put on dancehall or like even like Hawaiian reggae, she's just like, what's this shit? Like turn this off.
Mm.
And it's like it's funny though, because I find that the more that they, and it's probably going more into what you're asking me, but the more that they do that, the more like it forces me to want to reconnect.
Yeah.
So like I asked her, I was like, you know, why is it that you like don't want to as acknowledge like your Jamaican background? And for her, it's like, well, I didn't grow up Jamaican, I grew up Black. She was born here, she went to Black high schools, right? Like, my grandfather did not talk to her about Jamaican culture, like any of that. So like a lot of what I'm learning now too is like my own YouTube and like being around the Caribbean. It's like I don't really know, right? Like, so I would say that I am still Black, but I say Jamaican reborn because I'm trying to reconnect with my roots and figure out like what it is in the culture that I find to be like stuff I'm already doing, but also things that I could connect with that I think I can incorporate into my identities. And not in a way that's like picking and choosing the culture, right? Because I think that's that's another thing to talk about. But understanding Jamaican people, Jamaican history, so that when I talk to Jamaican experiences, it's grounded in like an actual knowledge, not what I'm seeing on C-SPAN or like my pasta videos from early 2000s. And, like, you know what I mean? Like it's real. So it's about everyone Jamaican. I currently work at the New School with Raquel Samuel, and used to work with,
but still very, very good friends with.
Nah, she left. She a flat.
Wow, y'all still call me a flat leaver? That's disrespectful.
She left us all.
Caribbean card for a minute.
Wow. First of all, I never left.
She jumped the boat.
She got it back. Before we landed.
Exactly.
Wow. Coward. Y'all disrespectful. It's all right. I know they love
she
me.
Homie, she
it's
homie,
all
she
love.
Homie.
It's all love. Because she's Jerry trying to cannot, be a, she's
Ms.
being Doc a doctor. Cannot, she's becoming
Ms. Doc
a doctor. Cannot,
that's,
ever.
This is that Caribbean love. You know, we never let you go.
Good. Don't let me go.
And we also guilt
attraction.
You.
That is very true.
Don't forget that part.
Very true.
The manipulation and the guilt trip.
It's always there.
Very Caribbean.
Yes. Yes.
So I guess that part never left me then. Burned in my
That was, yeah.
Burned
that
in my
was
dinner.
Passed down to you.
Burned in my dinner. My DNA. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so just to introduce myself then, my name is Jerry, and I am currently a PhD student at NYU. I used to work with these two amazing people at the new school, but we still homies forever, forever. They can't get rid of me ever. and my background is Grenadian, so my parents and my brother are from Grenada. I was born in Brooklyn, born and raised here.
Ooh.
Brooklyn.
BK.
BK.
Old Brooklyn.
Old Brooklyn. No, you're right. Old. You're sure right. Yes, old Brooklyn. No, that's for real, because I was born in Brownsville, and then I moved. Mm-hmm.
The town people used to be scared to go to East New York.
Right. Nice. Not no more. Now you can buy gluten-free muffins and all the avocado toast that you want.
Couldn't I say high school is untouchable?
Oh, my goodness, yo. And now they've, like, remodeled all of the lanes in the three line. It was like, we didn't need remodeling
before.
You didn't
need
before.
That. Exactly.
Okay, thanks.
Right.
Anyway, sorry.
No.
From Old Brooklyn.
Yeah, from Old Brooklyn. Moved to Mill Basin when I was around 9 or 10.
That's bougie Brooklyn.
Yeah. Well, you know, white flight happened, because when we moved to Mill Basin, it was originally all white neighborhood, and then as soon as we came in on the block, everybody wanted to go, and then that made room for more West Indians and people of color on our block, so whatever.
You created a West Indian neighborhood.
We sure
did. I guess we need to do that more often.
We sure did.
<Enclave.
laughs> But yeah, it's a little bit of my background, and I think I have a very similar experience to you, Deshaun, in terms of trying to reconnect with, like, my Grenadian roots, because I feel like, so because I was born here, my parents actually look at me as the Yankee, right? And so I didn't grow up knowing a lot about, like, Grenadian history, Grenadian culture. Whenever we would visit, which was not a lot, it was mostly just to see family, and then you hop back on the plane and you come back here, and you don't really learn anything. So now as I'm older, I get to appreciate that a lot more, and I get to appreciate just the little things, like memories of, like, being in the car with my dad all the time and him blasting soca music and all types of music to this day. To this day, and then seeing videos of him, that actually reminded me. So my dad, I'm gonna blow up his spot right now, but he used to be, like, a low-key soca artist, like, and when he was young.
Where's that
fast
on YouTube?
He has videos on YouTube.
No, he don't.
He sure does. You can search YouTube.
What was his name? What was his soca name?
Tommy C. And that's his real name. Tommy C. That was his stage name.
Straight up.
And
Tommy could not?
Just Tommy C.
Is that what the C stands
for? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tommy C.
And you can look it up, Culture Share, and there's, like, a whole bunch of videos of him, like.
What's his tag?
What's his tag?
What's his song tag? You know how, like, Masha has.
I don't know if he has one. That was before his time. I don't know. I don't know if he has one. You'd have to look through the videos and see. But, like.
Maybe. What would you say? What do you think he would say?
I'm distracted. I'm not going to look at that. I'm just like, whoa.
What would your dad say in a soca song?
Well, one of his songs I remember is Sugar Cake, which had a totally different meaning than the actual food.
I'm about to say, like, what sugar cake you talking about?
No, duh.
Yeah. But yeah, we're going to look it up after. But yeah, so that makes me appreciate and want to learn more. And I feel like now, as I've gotten older, like, I really want to reconnect to that and know, like, what am I missing? Like, what's the history that I'm missing, and reconnect to that, and not just not feel disconnected as because I was born here, and I do have the black experience, that is true, but I'm also West Indian, and I want to connect with that, and I want to pass that on to my children, you know, if I have that, and, you know, so I definitely totally relate to that experience for sure.
Yeah, and, like, back to this point of, like, family histories and stories, like, it's so important that we hold on to that and that we know, because it informs who we are and where we come from. It informs our behaviors, why we do what we do, right? But I think a lot of the times what happens, and I think this is really what this episode is centered around, is that there's a lot of things that our family doesn't tell us. And there's a lot of things there are a lot of things that are hidden.
Yeah.
Right? They come out in bits and pieces mm-hmm. sometimes, and you're like, sure, oh, yep. So that's mm-hmm. why you do what you do. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to talk about it mm-hmm. because it's just so, it's not pretty.
It's not pretty. Mm-hmm.
And we get to hear the stories of, like, your father being a soca artist.
Yeah.
And we get to, like, listen to the music mm-hmm. in the morning time. Like, we see the very ordinary everyday life, but mm-hmm. there's histories
yeah.
that come along with these people who we call our family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of the times they choose not to
tell us.
You know, and then all of a sudden you hear, like, so-and-so doesn't like so-and-so because of something that happened.
And you're like, what?
Ages ago.
But you can't talk to so-and-so. I'm like, but I don't have a problem.
Or you get a discussion after the barbecue, yes. like why he was talking to her.
Right. Yeah.
Don't trust her. Don't trust him. Yep. You know what they did to me? And it's like, right, but that was before I was even a thought.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I just got
to
here.
You, not to me.
Exactly.
So true.
So yeah, have you experienced that, gone through that, and how have you navigated that?
You
want to
go first?
Sure. So I my situation is a little different, but it pertains to like the history in that like I don't know a lot of the history of like pre-America because my grandfather died a year and a half ago. R.I.P. Mm-hmm. Baba. And a lot of the history went with him, mm-hmm. right? Like, because my mom and his like Americanization of her did similar things. Like, he didn't really talk to her about Jamaica. He didn't really talk to her about the kinds of things that went on before. But the histories that I do know of is more or less, like, silenced history, right? So, like, not only about the history of our culture, but, like, of our family. That there's, like, there are secrets, but there's, like, a stronger pull to keep secrets more secret because of the desire to assimilate, mm. right? That, like, if I knew a lot of the stuff that might have gone on pre-USA, then I would be incorporating those things into my life, and my family wanted me to be American. Mm. So the only things they wanted me to know were our American history. So, mm-hmm. like, I know when we came over here because I've seen birth certificates. I know, like, you know, things like that. And but, like, in terms of, like, the things that I've uncovered in relation to, like, just family period, like there are moments when, so I guess to back up, to give you a sense of my family now, my family is pretty much all located in Coney Island, and we are big holiday people, so we celebrate holidays together, we do barbecues pretty much every holiday, every birthday, mm-hmm. And my family is hella rambunctious in that we are laughing one minute, arguing the next, and then loving on each other the minute after that, right? That there's always like an emotional roller coaster, and in those times though, things come out, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, well, when I was 16, you say this, and like, I still feel like you think that of me. And I'm like, when you were 16, girl, if you don't get over that shit. But like, it's,
yeah.
But like, you can see the real ways that like some of that like internalized hatred or like even grudge holding like affects the family and how they tend to like put that on you mm-hmm. as yeah. like the younger people who, especially your parents, like they want you to feel exactly what they feel towards members because they want to feel like they have allies. They want to feel yeah. like they have somebody to come and talk to, or that you're not turning on them for somebody that they don't like. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard one because you're like, this is my family. We're blood. Mm-hmm. Like, I should know them. But then you also feel beholden to your parents.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like with Caribbean families in particular, like, I know that like my mom in particular, whether she thinks it's Caribbean or not, is like, you don't go against the family.
No.
Or, like,
no.
Your immediate family also. Like,
yes.
Like,
yeah,
my uncle and his kids and my aunt and, like, her, like, little thing she got going on in my family, like, we are all family, but our unit exists in this household.
Yes.
And when you come home, that's who you are loyal to.
Yep.
Right.
And it just feels really fractured. Like, it doesn't feel like we are, even we're together, like, family is true. Because there's still so much that no one has processed. And you, every day, like, somebody will say one thing, and that's my aunt, for example. She's very independent. She had a job since she was, like, 16. She works for the government. She has a house. Like, she's one of the only people, I mean, that owns a house. But if you say one thing to her, she'll go off. And it's like, mm-hmm. all I said to you was, can you pick up the plate of food off the counter and throw it away?
Right. Like where did this come from?
And it's like, everybody was telling me what to do and how to act. I'm like, whoa. You got some unprocessed anger or something that you got going on. But it's like, as part of the family, and I don't know if this like is a Caribbean or a black thing, because I've been like acculturated to black culture also. But there's like talking about things or being sensitive about things or like stewing over things or seeing therapy is just not, it's not acceptable. So what you do is that you argue in the privacy of your own family, because they know that what you say, no matter how hard you break down, is going to be kept secret. But what that does on the flip side is that it causes more trauma, it causes more pain, it causes more separation, more conflicts. But no matter what that is, you hold it a secret. And that's like how my family is. So like it's the part that I'm recognizing is that we still have the secret part, but the real, real secrets are around being Jamaican. Like I don't know any family history before my grandfather came here. And that was like done on purpose. Right. It's like part of this journey is like reconnecting with those things. And that can apply to anything, even if you know, right? Like you think you know parts of your family, even if you're like really into your Caribbean culture, they say one thing and your shit just flips on its head. But wait, that's not my real aunt. I've been calling her auntie for like 8 years.
That's not my cousin.
Y'all argued all of a sudden she's married into the family. She's not my real aunt. Like what?
Yikes.
It's
like, yikes.
Like, what's
that's
happening?
So true.
Yeah, I think it's such an important point that you bring up about like this blind loyalty that we are expected to have to our families. And I think the other piece to what you're saying too is about respectability politics, right? And this piece about assimilating. If you, whatever happens in this house, anything that is not pretty, anything that's not presentable, it needs to stay in here because of how the world is going to view you and how they're going to treat you.
And not just you, the whole family.
The whole family.
It's a reflection on the whole family.
What a burden.
Yes.
Right? And it's, I think after a while you begin to unravel because you don't know who you are. Because for most of your life, you feel like everyone tells you who you are. And you don't have the space to go and figure it out because you're forced to be silent. And you're forced to hold all of these questions and, you know, thoughts all to yourself. Because when you bring them up, it's like you're disrespectful.
Or you're judging of something that should not be touched.
It's like, what are you doing? We have a system here. You're disrupting.
Yeah.
On the functions, especially if you, I might be adding a layer, but especially if you are like college educated.
Speak to that.
You think you know more than me. You think you're better than us. You went to school. You went abroad. You got a high paying job. You think you're too good for this family now. I'm like, all I did was ask you about something that I kept.
I might have read an article or two.
Like, that's.
But that's it.
That's it. That's really it.
That's
true.
There are so many layers. There's so many layers.
That part is really painful, too, because your family stops seeing you as, like, you can't be yourself once you add that, like, layer of, and the flip side to that, too, right? They push you to be successful.
And exactly.
And they brag about, you know, you being in college and you're doing big things.
And that's outward presentation, right?
That's outward
presentation. They'll talk to all their friends about how great you are.
But when you come back and you use, you're using what you've learned.
Then they shame you.
It's like, no, don't do that to me. It's so interesting the way that happens.
It's so true. It's so true. I feel like my, you said something too that kind of resonated with me also in terms of like feeling fractured in terms of family. And I feel like that's a great description for me in terms of how I feel sometimes with my family because of that. Because of the whole like, I'm not talking to this person because of what they did years ago, so therefore nobody gets to talk to this person. And just like as a as an example, like my, I think about like what if I have children, like who am I introducing them to in the family? Like would they know like their aunts? Will they know their uncles, their grandparents? And I can't say that. Like I can't say that they will know who my cousins are because my cousins are the children of my mom's, you know, sisters and brothers, and they all have their own type of crazy dynamic where they don't really talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So that's very fractured. Even my relationship with, like, my half-sister. So I have an older half-sister who's the oldest. And I have no relationship with her. And it's kind of on my part, it's on purpose, but I kind of inherited it because her mother and my mother do not like each other. Like, it's been a thing, like, within the family, like, do not speak to these people. Don't gotta try to get close to her because she's gonna try to get to you through, you know, her daughter or whatever. Like, it's always some type of drama. So my response growing up has always been, I don't want any parts of that. And so I'm just gonna stay away from it. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder, as I get older, like, you know, what would it have been like if I grew up with, like, a sister in the house? Or, like, what would have that relationship have been like? And, like, it's kind of hurtful because it's, yeah. like, I part of me wants to have it. A part of me just doesn't want the smoke that comes with all mm-hmm. of that. Mm-hmm. It's, like, I'm not willing to risk all of that either. And I sometimes think about, like, how my dad maybe feels about it, too, because he kind of was in the position to choose me and my mom and my brother and our mm-hmm. family unit. So he doesn't really have, like, a close relationship with my half-sister. Just because of that and staying away from her mom and, like, their whole history together and how my mom was involved in all of that drama and all that stuff. So I sometimes wonder, like, does he wish, like, she was part of, like, the family dynamic more or integrated more or what that must have been like? I've never asked him, but part of me also is scared to ask because exactly. I'm not sure what kind of answer. It's a disruption. I'm not sure what kind of answer I'm going to get. I'm not sure how my mom is going to react to that question. Mm-hmm. Even asking about, like, her family history, I'm scared to even delve into that, too, because I really feel like there's a big part of me missing that I don't know about. Because I don't know parts of my parents' history. Mm-hmm. And the parts that I do know are very fractured and they come out, like, in the weirdest moments and weirdest times. So, like, that's something I'm always, like, cognizant of. And I'm very cognizant of, like, if I have children, I don't ever want them to feel like that. I want them to know where they came from. I want them to know what my experiences are, like, whoever their father's experiences is. Like, I want them to know that because I want them to have a good sense of themselves. But that's something that I kind of struggle with too. Like, I don't know my full family history, and I think I was telling you this before, Rocky, but, like, even the secrets part, right, when it comes to mental health, that's a whole other realm of secrecy as well, because one of my uncles on my mom's side, for years, like, all you heard was, oh, he's crazy, he's not, like, fully there. Or, you know, I always knew something wasn't 100% right with him. I just never knew what it was. And it wasn't until he passed away that I had to kind of, like, be sneaky and dig into my own research and find out, okay, like, why did he die? Like, he had a mental illness. Every time I asked my mom, oh, he's just not all the way there. He was just always like that or whatever. Okay, but what does that mean? You know? Mm-hmm. Nothing. Like, it just wasn't talked about, brushed over. Like, you just don't talk about it. And when he did die, I found out that he died from either, like, being overdosed with a medication that he was not supposed to be taking, or that, you know, they don't know a lot about mental health, like, in the Caribbean, so they just were not checking for it like that, or they weren't mm-hmm. taking care of him in the way that he was supposed to. But I had to look at, like, what medication he was taking and Google it to find out, okay, like, maybe he had, I'm, like, maybe 90% sure he was schizophrenic. But nobody talked about that. Mm-hmm. Nobody had a name for it. No one wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why do I have to go through all of these, like, mm-hmm. backhanded routes to kind of figure out, like, what was happening? Like, that's important to know. You think, like, if something like that is running in your family, don't you think that's important mm-hmm. to figure out? Mm-hmm. But nobody talks about it, you know? So
they don't want you to know.
They don't want you to know. And it's like, it's a stigma, I guess. It's a source of shame, maybe. Because of the different cultural meanings behind it. But, like, it's like, these are important things that we should be having conversations about, but no one wants to touch.
Yeah, I mean, even the term schizophrenia, like, the diagnosis schizophrenia, I don't think it's something that is Caribbean or West
exactly.
Indian. If you see someone who has schizophrenic symptoms, like walking down the street.
That's not the first thing you're saying.
Walking up the road, right? You're not going to be like, oh, that dude is schizophrenic. You're going to say that crazy man.
Mm-hmm. Or he has some type of spirit. Or some
just about to say that. There's always a spirit.
It's always a spirit involved somewhere.
He's touched by the devil. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now that I'm saying that, like, it makes sense why they wouldn't want to touch that, because I'm sure that they've heard it before. And I'm sure there's an extra layer to it because my grandparents were preachers. Like, they grew up in the church. My grandfather was a minister, and he had his own church. My grandmother was a minister as well. So, like, adding that extra layer to it of, like, oh, he's possessed by something, and people talking and the shame that comes with that, I'm sure there's an extra layer of that that nobody wants to really touch. But it's important to know, you know?
I think, too, like, so I'm going to switch gears a bit because I think it's a perfect segue into talking about, like, our roles that we've come to assume, right? So you, as a doctor of social work.
I'm not that yet.
You basically that. Doctor.
I got 3 more years.
Rest of the episode, we're going to call you doctor. So the doctor said.
I can't.
You know, because you have this training, right? You've been studying social work for a while, and so clinical social work also. Mm-hmm. And so you understand mental health in a different way than your parents might have. So you can, you even had the fortitude to be like, oh, I can actually search this medication.
Yeah.
And if I trace it back, I could find out what my uncle had. Right. So even to have that knowledge, right? So you're now armed, and you, Deshaun, like you mentioned, like once you're college educated, you get more information and you become more of this culture and more of this world, and it kind of distances you from, you know, what you've grown up in. And you don't, I mean, you can feel, for me, sometimes I feel alienated and isolated because of it, but it, I think my education and what I've learned has really pushed me to make sense of a lot of the family history, and I can see where the things have gone wrong, and I understand why. I can make some sort of sense of it. And so, like, I wanted to bring in this episode of Queen Sugar. Spoiler alert. So season 4, episode 1 of Queen Sugar, which is on OWN. If you don't watch, you should check it out. It is awesome. It continues from season 3, where Nova Bordelon, who's one of 3 siblings who live in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
New Orleans.
And, you know, they have a family, they're from the South, and they have a family history that is quite problematic, and there's family stories. And Nova is a writer, she's a journalist, she's sort of an activist, and she has taken it upon herself to write this book that has all of the family's, like, most dirtiest secrets, right? It's like a self-memoir. So Deshaun and I actually went to a premiere screening with the actors. You know, we fancy. And we saw the episode before it aired, and, you know, it was great, but there were some thoughts in the room, and one of the questions that the actress who plays Nova Bordelon, her name is Rutina Wesley, one of the questions that she had was something along the lines of, like, what was it?
Why is Nova so messy?
Yeah.
That one?
Basically calling her, like, the messy sibling, the messy sister, right? And her response, so, like she said, she was just like, you know, I don't see it as messy. I see it as a beautiful mess, right? Because Nova's intention is to have healing for her family, to have her family have these secrets exposed, right? Which is painful, and it is messy. But the intent is, if you have everything, if you shine a light on all of these problems, that eventually some of these problems can be addressed head on, and there can be some healing on the other side of it. So for me, when I watched that, that really resonated, because sometimes I feel that way. I feel like because I know a little bit more and I know better, and not in a way that's like I'm better than you, yeah, but more in a way like I know things now, yeah, and I want to help. I want to offer a different perspective because we've been doing it this way for so long. Yeah. Let's try something different. But I understand that if I approach it this way, that yeah, I could be starting some shit. So yeah, does that resonate with you at all, or
does it?
I mean, that's how I'm feeling.
So I.
Where are we going?
So okay, I'm gonna say this because I'm a big advocate for self-care, for self-reflection. Like, I go to therapy, and mm-hmm, actually last week I was talking to my therapist about this. So mm-hmm, we were talking about like my extreme relationship with my family for many reasons, and one of the main things we talked about was that my family some of them think that when I come over, I try to tell them what to do, or I think I know everything. Mm-hmm. I was in a situation with my mother. She smokes cigarettes, and I've, since I was young, tried to get her to quit. And more, at least in the past like few years, she's been complaining about her health. She's been more sick. She constantly talks about like wanting to change her diet, wanting to exercise. So I took it upon myself to help her and mm-hmm, like remind her that when she smokes, like yesterday you said you were gonna quit. Like, you gave mm-hmm, yourself 3 weeks. 3 weeks has passed. Like, you're yeah, still smoking. And what that has turned into was me looking over her shoulder, or her like looking over her shoulder. I feel like I'm telling her what to do. I feel like I'm trying to change her life. And I feel like that she's the only one that feels that way. Like, when we go to family gatherings, right? Like, I'll talk about my experiences abroad, or I'll talk about like the ways in which I've come to understand conflict resolution. So if mm-hmm, folks are arguing, I'll try to like stop them from arguing, or if like somebody comes at me in a way that they've always, mm-hmm, right, because my family just is that way, mm-hmm, I try to think about responding differently, and yeah, that response to them is very different from what they're used to.
Yeah.
So it could be, you know, sometimes I'm very calm and I'm just like asking them questions about why they're yelling or why they're upset, and they're like, you're not my therapist, like, why are you talking to me that way, like, mm-hmm, you know. And it's not that I truly feel like I am better than them or want to be
yeah,
different, but on my own journey for like figuring out who I am, I've come to peace with a lot of the things that I have been going through. Yeah. And I can see some of those same things in my family because those things that I were going through was in relation to my family.
Yeah.
Right? So, right. Like,
right.
A lot of the trauma that I processed came from my childhood.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was around my brother, my mother, my father, like all of my family. And when I'm around them and I can still see some of that trauma playing out, some of the mistrust, right, and present in the room, some of the like the grudge holding, I can see it because I've processed it. I can see it because I have a bachelor's degree, I have a yeah, master's degree. Like, I've took it upon myself to research some of the stuff in my mm-hmm, schooling, to like really be aware of psychological processes, of theory, of all kinds of things that I use for myself
yeah,
that I want to use for my family.
Yeah.
Right. But one of the things that I've realized in my therapy, you know, session, which I completely agree with, but that I find it hard to actually enact, is that like I can't control them, and what they
yeah,
are going to do is what they are going to do. What they want to do is what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But it's hard, right? Like, being the person that they pushed me for higher education, being the person they pushed to be better than them, it's hard trying to bring the information back and then them rebuffing you as if you are just no longer like part of the family, as if
mm-hmm,
your voice isn't as strong as anyone else in the room, like as if
yeah,
who you have become is not who the family is, right? Like, you are now an outsider, although
yeah,
they've asked you to yeah, go out and like do things that they weren't able
exactly,
to do. You've been able to process it, so you know how to come back and interact, but
yeah,
they don't know how to interact because they've never had to think about anything other than what they've been doing
yeah,
for this whole time.
Yeah.
Damn, I feel attacked right now.
Just
no, it's so true.
It feels so bad.
I wonder how much part of that, though, also is us as children, like, going against what our roles are in Caribbean culture, right? Like, as a child, you have a specific role. You stay in your lane. You don't question authority.
Mm-hmm.
You do what is said. And you don't, you know, you don't talk back. You don't question. You don't challenge things. And so
mm-hmm,
I wonder how much of that is also pushback of, like, you're my child. Like, how are you telling me what to do? I don't care how old, right. Still on your ass. Still, yeah. Grab that belt and beat your ass. Right? Back, take you out of it. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, yeah, that's so true.
And I think that's usually the response when someone has no comeback.
Yeah. Right.
Usually that's the go-to. Right.
That's the go-to.
It's like, because you're coming at me with something that I never had to deal with. Mm-hmm. So yes. You know what? I'm going to threaten you.
That's it. Yep. That's it.
And if you think, like, if you really, like, boil it down, like, that's so messed up.
Yeah.
That's
so
violent.
Messed up. It's violent. It's abusive. It's emotional abuse.
Yes.
And again, like, I don't think that's the intention. But over time, when you are always confronted with that behavior, you begin to internalize it.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the silencing plays in. Because then you're like, oh, I can't question it. Because I've been conditioned at this point that if I question or talk back quotes, right?
Right.
Quote, there's consequences.
Yep.
Yeah.
And for me personally, like, I took that, and in some ways take that in every space that I enter. Sometimes at work, I find myself silencing myself. Because I'm like, ooh, your authority, like, it could be, like, a superior, like, it's like, no, this is work. You don't have to do that. But when you've become so programmed to function in that way, you carry it in every space.
It's so true. And I think that's why, again, like, one of the reasons why I got into social work, because I did feel, growing up, like, I couldn't question anything. Like, I couldn't challenge anything. I couldn't even express how I felt. If expressing anger would be talking back and being disrespectful. And, like, I had no way to channel that energy, or I didn't know what to do with that. So, like, a lot of it was repressed anger.
Mm-hmm.
I'd even say depression for a lot of it, too. And not knowing how to handle that. My saving grace was journaling growing up. Because that was the only way I knew how to get my feelings out without anybody, like, challenging me or, like, you know, like, judging me or criticizing me about it. I could just write it out on paper and, like, just leave it there. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was my outlet. But, like, and then as I got older, then I started learning more about, like, social work and advocacy and, like, what that meant. I'm like, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want to do. But, like, you can't stand up for or advocate for other people if you don't know how to stand up and use your voice for yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I had to go through that process also of learning how to do that and what that meant. But even now, it's still sometimes, like, I consciously have to push myself to be, like, it's okay to take up space. It's okay to say your piece. It's okay to express yourself. It's okay to have an opinion that's not gonna agree with, you know, what you're used to or what everyone else is used to, but goes against the norm. Like, it's okay to hold that space and be who you are, but that's hard to navigate. Like, that took years of, like, trying to do that.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that.
And I feel like I've gotten there, but I think the flip side of it is that because I try to take up space in my family now, and what I find is that we're actually pulling away from each other. That there's, like, a, like, I feel like I'm not being heard, and they feel like I'm trying to change them. That there's, like, a this, like, weird, like, butting of heads that no one wants to talk about. Like, even when I say, like, listen, I feel like this is happening, it's like, that's not happening. That's not happening. No, you just think you know it all again. And I'm like, no, I'm actually trying my hardest to, like, rekindle this and to build relationships, but, like, at some point, also, like, even with, you know, like, we're a family and there's no secrets and you don't talk back, like, at some point, especially, like all, like, first year students, like, in all cultures, families feel like when they are Americanized and when you start to, like, internalize a different culture, that you are going against them.
Yeah.
Like, that's not just Caribbean culture, for example, but when I recognize Caribbean culture, though, that, you know, especially, you know, my household, that there is a, you don't get brownie points for talking up. You don't get brownie points for finally finding your voice.
Correct.
You actually get negative.
Correct.
You get
cold.
Like, you get cold, right? And, like, and then internalize that. It's like, oh, Deshaun is here again. Or, like, don't say anything about this thing because Deshaun has his opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm like, or, like, hey, Raquel, I'm like, you were saying, you know, the defense mechanism that they have is more like to threaten you.
Yes.
But my aunt has started doing it because she's realized that like the threats don't work. Is that she'll say, well, I don't know how to talk about that because I didn't go to college.
Aww.
And like she'll use statements like that where it's like, and I'm like, you don't have to have a college degree to have opinions, boo. Like that's
right.
not what this is about. But that's the other part of it is like instead of like yelling at you, kind of you know, respond to that, I'm just gonna tell you that I didn't go to college, so I don't know what to say.
Yeah,
I
mean,
that's not what this is about.
Yeah.
College may have like heightened my understanding of things, but it didn't change the way
exactly
I am with family. It didn't change the way that like I approach issues. It just gave me the skills to be able to talk about them,
exactly.
to be able to talk through them, to be able to conflict resolve. Like, so it's like the you either silence yourself or you're too loud that your family like doesn't want to interact with you anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just like.
You can't win.
There's
right.
no
they
want
it's
from
just
me.
Right. And when I'm around and I'm quiet, it's like, are you okay?
Why
like,
are you not talking?
Put on music. Like, let's dance. And I'm like, nah.
No.
Because the minute I say something, you're going to start your shit. Yeah. And then I'm going to just retreat. Like, this is about self-care now. Like, y'all are family, and I love y'all, and I would be around y'all, but I'm not going to let y'all take away my care.
Can we please, like, talk about how hard it is to draw boundaries? Like, within, like,
boundaries? What does that mean? What is the definition? I don't know that word.
Oh, my gosh.
Boundaries are infinite.
Boundaries.
Define boundaries.
That space of drawing a wall between you and I, where you end and I begin, mm-hmm. or vice versa. Like, having that space to just be without you intruding on it, or having a comment or an opinion, mm-hmm. or feeling like you need to have say something about how I live my life or what I do with it or whatever. Like, that's so hard.
As soon as you walk in, ooh, yeah, you put on 5 pounds. Like,
did I ask you?
Why? Why do you feel like you need to say something?
Hi.
Why?
How was your day?
How are you?
How's it going?
Like,
how's the weather? How about them Yankees? Like,
God, like, why?
Yeah, I still have a hard time with that. And again, like I said earlier, when you have a difficult time, because like our families are our first introduction to relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a hard time setting boundaries very early on, you start to carry that in
everywhere.
Your romantic relationships,
yes.
in your friendships, in the workplace, because you are conditioned, once
to
again,
do that.
You are taught that you have no
boundaries.
How dare you?
You don't matter. Your feelings don't matter. Your voice doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Just get the work done. Do as I say.
Exactly. Exactly.
I've
cut off friendships because of that. Like, I've, there was one friendship, the only friendship I've ever in life cut off was because her behavior reminded me so much of my mom and just the lack of boundaries and respect that I was like, I can't deal with that. Like, that's a no.
Mm-hmm.
like it just bled into everything. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm a firm believer in, like, you teach people how to treat you. So, like, for me, like, if I wasn't teaching my family how to treat me, like, there was no way that I was going to be teaching other people how to treat me and how I wanted to be treated either. So that was my impetus for, like, no, we need to set boundaries here. This is what's going to happen. This is what's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I expect you to talk to me and I expect us to communicate. And this is what is a hard no. And these are the consequences of what will happen if those boundaries are crossed.
Mm-hmm.
And, like... And it's hard because sometimes they push it very, very much,
mm-hmm.
and they try to test you, but you have to find a way to stick it in to
mm-hmm.
make it work.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking about like, on the context you brought up, on Queen Trigger also, right? Like the unidentified boundary around families.
Yeah.
Is secrets.
Yeah.
Right. Like you don't.
Hmm.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only boundary that families have. Like, when we're in the spaces together, I can
say
or do whatever the hell I want to you.
Yep.
Like we said earlier, right? But, like, when it comes to family unit in relation to the outside world or other people, that's the only boundary.
Yeah.
Like, you don't do anything. So, like, in the case of Nova, right? Like, in her writing this book, it's clear in the first episode that she's doing this for... her own, like, it's for her family, but it's really about her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's using her art, right? She's using her learned skills, she's using her gift in
her
a way that is healing
also.
For herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, her education in a way that she finds most authentic,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's healing for herself. But the consequences of that healing is exposure of her family.
To everyone.
Right? And, like, in the case of, like, us too, like, similar things. Like, we might use social work or higher ed or psychology or whatever to, like, deal with what we're dealing with. But in doing that, we're always interacting with our family. Our Nova's case, it's, like, large scale. Right? But for us, it could be with our mom or with our aunt or our cousin where it's, like, I need to heal, so this is how I'm doing it. So you're going to have to change some things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, in the case with Nova, she is not saying that to her sister or to her brother, Ralph Angel. She's saying that shit to her entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that is public, that cannot be ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, like, that's, like, ultimate betrayal.
Yeah.
Ultimate betrayal.
Do you think, though, I just thought of it as you were saying, like, do you think there's a thin line between that ultimate betrayal of your family and, like, choosing yourself and choosing your own healing?
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part.
And your voice, right?
That's the difficulty. Yeah. You know, you want to be, you're taught to be loyal.
You're taught to be
your
loyal,
family.
But at the same time, I'm being disloyal to me and, like, my truth.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's honoring yourself
in the
process.
It doesn't matter. Because the greater good is the family.
Right.
Right? And that's just, like, whole family first trope that I find,
like,
problematic. It's like, blood is thicker than water, and it's like, whose blood? Because right now, y'all blood is thicker than mine
because I'm
the one that needs
to
be loyal to you, right?
Yeah.
And it's
sacrificing.
Like, and that's not...
Yeah. I even think, too, like, I think therapy is seen as selfish.
Very,
how dare you go into a stranger's office and tell them all of our business?
Mm-hmm.
How dare you? In the name of what? You talk to the Lord.
You pray on it.
You pray on it.
Right.
That's the only person I tell my things to. You're going into a stranger's house? Like, and I think that's so, again, it's so problematic.
Yeah.
It's so problematic. Because, like, you've been bottling up all of these things. And you have all of these questions. You can't really go to your family to explore them.
Exactly.
Here's this space where you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times, like, I'm in therapy also, but I keep it very hidden. I don't say it.
Right.
I don't talk about it, really.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I do for myself.
Yeah.
And that's that. Because I know the minute I bring it up, it's going to be a huge thing.
Yep.
It's going to be this whole other thing.
Yep.
Why do you need therapy? What's wrong with you?
And what did you go through?
Right.
You have everything.
That's not because of me.
Right.
Okay,
sis. I raised you right.
Exactly.
I raised you right. I don't know what you wanted therapy for.
Yeah.
And that's like my family took. My family don't know I go to therapy. They don't know I have ADD. They don't know, like, any of that stuff, right? Like, they don't know that I'm taking medication for that. Like, they pretty much, like, operating as if, like, when I come over, they just know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what we do in this space together is who we are. And then when we go our separate ways, that's who we are. And that's also problematic, right? It's like, the family sees itself as a unit, yes, when we're, like generally, but it's really only when we're all together.
Mm.
Like, when we are in our own home, we're by ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, it's, people have their own shit, their own
sins
that
they do.
Do
you feel like your family has a sense of, like, who you are fully, like, as a full being and a full person?
Cherry.
Nope.
Because that's how I feel.
Cherry.
Sometimes I'm like, I'm not
the
only one.
You hit the nail on
the
head. I think about that all of the time.
Yeah?
And I think, you know, here at the university, at the new school, I do work with first-generation college students, and one of the things that, you know, I talk about with them is you're living a double life.
Yes.
And even in my adult life, you know, even though I've graduated and I live on my own and I'm grown, right, paying my own bills, I still very much feel like I live a double life. I feel like I have to code switch.
Same.
And it's draining. It's so draining.
Yeah.
It's like, again, you feel like, sometimes I feel like I'm in the middle of identity crisis. Because I'm just like, okay, who am I? All of these things,
right?
Like,
mm-hmm.
where do I fit?
Or am I just playing a role for you right now?
Right.
Yeah.
It's survival. Like, I've come to understand that, like, whenever I'm my family, I am in this 5 hours. I'm at this barbecue. I'm surviving. I'm not. And that's the conditioning part too, right? It's like I've learned that this is where I need to be to not cause trouble.
Yeah.
And
not causing trouble.
Not because I will actually cause trouble, but because I know that me being who I am is going to cause the family to unravel for their own reasons, but they're always, those feelings are always contributed to, like, to me and some perceived notion that they have of me as, like, an educated family member.
That
happens in lots of families, especially for people, like, who, even, like, first generation college students who are Black or who are, we talked about this, like, it's any variation of culture or understanding, I think, is taken by the elders in your family as, like, you're off track, or you are becoming too Yankee, or you're like, you're just not, you're no longer one of us, or that we don't see you as one of us, and that's hurtful.
That really hurts.
It's further isolating and distancing yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And then, again, when you come into these spaces, come into white spaces sometimes too, it's just like you're too...
You don't belong here either.
You're too Black.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, where do you fit?
Where do you fit?
Yeah.
In some all-Black commune on the Lower East Side.
Well, that was depressing.
Some new Black-owned yoga space. Lululemon type thing.
Lululemon, how weak.
Your Reiki train certificate.
Do we have any takeaways?
I think it's really important to find people like this that you mesh with. Like, find your tribe. Find your peoples. It's so important. And I recognize that as I get older, because I think even just talking to you, with you earlier, Rocky, like, we were talking about, like, how we come... we're a different generation from my parents, because they come from the don't trust anybody, don't talk to anybody, don't tell anybody your business. And they don't really have friends like that because of that. They don't have that support. And, like, even growing up, I was like, well, how come my mom got all these problems with all these people? But, like, I have friends. My friends are not like this.
Like, and the crazy part, too, is that those people probably don't have problems with your mother.
They probably don't.
They probably don't know that they're beefing. That's like,
we got beef?
They come to the kids like, yo, I'm a homegirl. I haven't seen her in, like, 10 years. She lives in a little basin. We really cool. And your mama's like...
Nah.
That lady is wild.
She's don't
crazy.
Trust her.
Like, that's you're beefing
it.
With yourself.
That's it.
But she said hi, though.
It was fake.
You ain't see the way she said it? Her eyelash twitched a little bit. Just like her pinky toe went
right.
In.
The sub petite
strips in. No, but for real, they don't really have that. And so for me, like, having the total opposite experience of that, but seeing, like, how that gets lonely if you don't have that support, like, that just makes it even more important for me to have. So, like, just finding your peoples, man. Finding your peoples.
Yes. And to, like, add on that, like, expanding the definition of family. Like,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Your blood is going to be there. You grew up with them. You love them. They love you. And there are issues, right? And, like, some folks feel like their family issues are too much for them to actually be around. Mm. And that, I think that's okay if somebody decides to, like, cut ties with their family. Like, that's... Mm. But you should also find folks who you can talk to.
Yeah.
And, like, right? Like, as... I think, for me, as, like, a queer, Black, cisgender Jamaican dude, like, there's a... I've learned to, like, find and to use this term, right? Like, like my chosen family.
Mm-hmm.
And people who... I know that I can process things with, who I can talk to, people who I know is going to be there for me, who's going to listen to me, but also challenge me, right?
Yeah.
Like, when I am on some, like, wild, reckless thought processes, they'd be like, yo, you're wildin', calm down.
Get it together.
All in your head right now, I'm going to need you to, like, leave some space for everybody else. Like, that's real. That's real. And you're not going to find that from your family sometimes, right? And that's okay. Like, recognize what your family does for you and get that from them. Recognize what your friends and other folks do for you and get that from them. Like, build your tribe, like you were saying. Build that. Build your chosen family, your tribe. Like, you can be around your family and love them, but you don't need to have this, like, quintessential family view that you see on TV. Like, Family Matters, Bill Cosby, like, Mm-hmm. The Jeffersons, like, they all had their issues, right? But they, at the end of every episode, came together and resolved the issues. That's not real.
Exactly.
It's not
real. It's so true. Yeah.
It's not real.
It's so true. And I think just building off of that, back off of that, is too, like, adjusting your expectations. I feel like a lot of the time, because they're blood, like, we have these expectations of them that they're supposed to fulfill all of these needs. And it's like, no, it's not true. It's not true. It's like what I was saying earlier, like, you can't expect gallons from pint people. Like, if they're not able to...
What?
All right, let's say...
I'm going to need that on my office door.
Hold up.
All the snacks.
I'm going to need some small ones I can just slap in people's heads, too.
So, Bishop T.D. Jakes, I love him because he has this saying that just always stuck with me for years. You cannot expect gallons from pint people.
Aside from the fact that it came from T.D. Jakes...
I know, but that wisdom, just take the wisdom.
Respect the idea, not the person. No, I'm
kidding. Separate the art from the artist.
No, but for real, like, don't expect something from a person that they can't give you. Yeah. Try to find that, like you said, in other ways from different people. You know, you get to choose that,
and you'll be happier in the end.
Yeah,
so true.
You'll be happier in the end.
Yeah, I think also, like, the both of you touched on it, right? Everyone has their capacity.
Yeah.
You recognize the capacity. You're like, okay, I could come to you for X, Y, and Z. I could come to you if I need a pick-me-up, if I need a good laugh, but I can't come to you if I need to cry.
Yep.
But my friend over here... they're a good shoulder to cry on. Yes. So I'm going to go over here when I need.
Yeah.
When I need that, right? It's identifying your tribe.
Yeah.
And identifying these key people who you can go to for different things. And I'll also add, too, like, I think it's important that remembering that this is, a lot of this is painful. Like, when you come to the realization that your family, your parents, your caregivers aren't the people who you thought that they were, it's, you grieve it.
So true.
So you need to take that time to grieve that. Feel all of those feelings. Yep. Understand it. Sit with it. It's painful as hell. Like, you don't want to... who wants to face that, right? But the only way to get over that is to get through that.
Exactly.
And deal with that grief and sit with that grief and realize lost. You're like, oh,
yeah.
You lost. It's a loss.
So, like, you lost your mom or your aunt.
Yeah.
It's a loss, right? And so from that point, you start to rebuild. And that's when you tap into those people who you can really... confide in, and and you go to therapy if you need to, smoke a blunt if you need to, do what you gotta do. But yeah,
and that comes with, like, I think putting yourself first, right?
Yeah,
like, recognizing that loving your family and loving yourself are not mutually exclusive, that you can do both.
Yes.
But that there are times when you're going to have to focus on yourself more than you loving on your family.
Yeah.
Like, and the messed up part is that, like, your family might not recognize that, and they might see it as you pulling away, but that's... you can try to have the conversation with them, but sometimes they don't understand. And if they don't understand, you do what you need to do to make sure that you're good in the end. You know? Like, it's... it has to be about you. Like, part of you... recognizing who you can cry on is because you've done the work for yourself, and you've stopped letting, or at least you've minimized the onslaught of, like, expectations for you, you know, from your family. Because I honestly, I'm still controlled by some of that stuff.
Listen, like, I think we all are to some extent. Yeah. That's a process.
You can, like, you can minimize the effect it has on your everyday.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And part of that is, like, making space for you.
Yeah.
Saying no to that barbecue sometimes.
Legit.
Right? Like, sending a gift, or, like, going, but, like, knowing that you're not going to be, like, wilding out or, like, causing arguments and just chilling.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm with my family at barbecue, I don't really say anything, but I really do love being around them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it feels good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
Like, not all connection needs to come from the voice. It can come from the body.
I agree with
mind.
That, like, wholeheartedly. Yeah. I literally, like, if I'm having, like, a hard week, I'll go over to my grandmother's house, and that's where my family is.
Yeah.
And I feel... so much better.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just being in the presence. And seeing my aunts and seeing my little cousins and talking with my grandmother and hugging my grandmother.
Yeah.
Like, just being in the space. Like, there's nothing
it's
else
so true.
Like it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, you can tap back into that when you need it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you, all that wraps up and you said last, like, takeaways, but go we should it. At some point talk about grandmas, because my grandmother is dope.
Mine is too.
The Caribbean grandmas are,
they're the best.
They got their own things, but, like, they are,
they're awesome. Yeah. Yeah. They got all the tea.
Love, all the tea. And they're like at the point where like they say things and you know they just say it because they're stuck in their ways and they're just like,
you just gotta let them go. Right. You gotta let them go.
I love you anyway.
And they,
like,
don't care.
No.
They don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm. They don't care. That's the best part. Mm-mm. So part two, grandma.
Part two, grandma.
They need to get their due.
Yes.
Yeah.
Respect to the grandmas. They are the
glues. They are the it. That's of the true. Family. If you have a grandma.
That too.
That's true.
We know that not all folks have grandmas. Yeah.
All right, Pekingese.
We need like a going out song. So
what's we my... do. All right, what's it? Our going out song?
You are my soca family, family, family.
I'm just going to be the boy. Boy, oi. And that girl.
She said, Jerry added the extra oi to the boy early. I was like,
why
oi?
Why oi? Why oi?
Why oi?
Why
oi?
Why oi?
Why oi?
Why oi?